Well, you may find this hard to believe, but I know exactly what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, well, I thought everything from Texas was supposed to be big. You're wondering, does he drive a pickup truck, Bubba? Well, I must confess as we begin this morning that after many seasons of baseball and soccer, I do not drive a pickup truck. I drive a minivan. And I wish that my wife Melissa and our son David could have piled into the minivan and driven to Florida this week. They are coming later, for which I am grateful, and hope to introduce you to them and them to you. Thank you so much for the invitation to come and be with you. I never even considered when this was put on the books years ago that I would come at the time when my daughter was a student at Florida College. But I'm certainly thankful that that's the case, and hope you get to meet her this morning as well. Fight the good fight of faith. Paul says that to the young preacher Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 12. If you have the ESV, it says, war the good warfare. What that tells us is that we are a people at war. We're supposed to be fighting as good soldiers of Jesus Christ. You say, well, I'm not a fighter. Then you can't be his disciple. He does specify that it's a good fight. This isn't just somebody looking for an argument. This is a good fight fought by good soldiers of a good warfare. So this week we'll be talking about enlisting in the Lord's army, going to battle, learning to fight the good fight. For our purposes this morning, we're going to talk about what every soldier has to do, and that's overcome your fears. You ever thought about how many times in the Scriptures we read, do not fear? Do not fear. Do not be afraid. So let's talk this morning about Jesus enlisting His army and drafting the 12 apostles. Now I want to do this first session as a class. I want to solicit your answers to questions, any comments you might have. Please just raise your hand. But here's a group of 12 men who were followers of Jesus that as He taught them, as He prepared them for His departure, where they would go and fight the good fight, He constantly had to rebuke them for their lack of faith. For instance, Matthew 8 and verse 26, why are you so timid, you men of little faith? Mark 4 and verse 40, how is it that you have no faith? Matthew 15 and verse 16, are you still lacking in understanding? How would these men go from those who were timid and no faith and lacking in understanding to those who with all boldness go and preach the gospel into all the world? Well, they were trained from fear to faith. And that's the same process that every disciple of Jesus Christ is going to have to go through, from fear to faith. What I want to do is look through the four lists of the apostles as they are given throughout the Gospels. They're listed four times, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then in Acts. Each time we learn something different. It's not always presented the same way. But when we look at those four lists of the 12 apostles, they will help transform us from fear to faith that we can fight the good fight. The first one is found in Matthew chapter 10, Matthew's Gospel, the 10th chapter. And we'll start reading at verse 1. And having summoned his 12 disciples, He gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these: the first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, and James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax gatherer, James the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. Now, when we define an apostle, what is an apostle? What is the Bible class textbook definition? Somebody tell me. An apostle is one who is sent. I said that one time in class, 1 cent, and somebody thought I was talking about a penny. 1 cent is a person who's been commissioned to go. Look at the first phrase of verse 5. These 12 Jesus sent out. And so an apostle was one specifically chosen to be sent out. These were the ones Jesus was going to send first to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and then finally into all creation. One who is sent. But what is the first word used for these 12 men in verse 1? It's not the 12 apostles, but what does Matthew say? He summoned his 12 what? Disciples. Okay, same question. What's the Bible class answer for a disciple? What is it? A follower or a student or a learner? Think about that. Before Jesus ever sent out the 12 apostles, he first called them to be his 12 disciples. Before he ever said, go and preach, he said, come and learn. Otherwise, how would they know what to preach? How would they know what to go teach until they were first disciples? They watched Jesus. They learned from him. They listened to his parables and his sermons. They beheld his miracles. And so they first came and learned of him. Now, when we think of the apostles and trying to imitate the apostles, we need to understand that there are some things that Jesus gave the apostles to do that we could never attain. Things that are unique to these 12 that we don't have today. And what does the text indicate are some of those things? What did he instruct them to do first in verse, or give them authority to do in verse 1? It's right on the page. All right, somebody mumbled it back here. What does to do? All right, cast out unclean spirits. Okay, to heal diseases. Now, anybody here got the authority to do that? God gave anybody here the ability to cast out demons and to heal sicknesses and diseases on the spot? That was part of what was given the 12. What else did Jesus promise the apostles that he did not promise to all men? He said, I'm going to go away and the Spirit will come and do what? Guide you into all truth. Not only is he going to cause you to remember things you've forgotten, but he's going to tell you things you hadn't even learned yet. Guide you into all truth. He's going to give you the words to say. Oh, that he would do that for preachers today. So there are things that the apostles did and were given power to do that God has not promised us. Yes, sir.
Sick, let doesn't call for the elders of the church. He talks about knowing them with the oil and prayer of faith. You know, and God will raise them up, and if they commit any sins, he'll forgive them. So sick, call for the elders, pray without ceasing. So we can pray the things of God on his church and his leaders and his disciples to do. Still care about the sick and still so for healing for the sick, but there are certain things, all of this to be kept in the right, the things that the apostles were to do and weren't to do, they're being kept in the right perspective.
All right, very good. So we do have the ability then to use God's power for healing. That's through prayer. Very good. Okay, thank you. Very good. Now, when we use the word apostle, usually we think of the song, Jesus called them one by one. The Bible uses the word apostle not just for these 12, but for other people. Can you think of others in the New Testament who are called an apostle that you didn't see their names here in Matthew 10? Who comes to mind? All right. In fact, usually that's how we, when we talk about one of the letters he wrote, we call him the Apostle Paul. Poor guy, still trying to defend his apostleship today. Good. Who else? Who else is an apostle? Barnabas is called an apostle. Jesus is called an apostle in the book of Hebrews. Think about it. One sent on a mission. So there is a generic use of the word, and then the specific here to the original 12. Now, when you look at the lists of the apostles, guess who? Sometimes the order is different, list to list. But guess who is always listed first? Peter. In fact, Matthew uses the word the first here. That's the Greek word protos, like prototype. And so the first, Simon Peter. There is no passage that indicates he was the official leader or the official spokesman of the 12. But did you know that of all the conversations Jesus had with the 12, more is recorded about what he said to Peter than any of the others? And of all the apostles who spoke to Jesus, more is recorded about what Peter said to the Lord than any other. So Peter, rightly, each time is listed first. Now, in Matthew's account, he also, here's something unique to his account, and it's in verse 3. Matthew, the author, mentions his profession. In the other list, it's just Matthew. But here it is Matthew, the tax gatherer. Now, why would that be something that would be significant? Why would he make the point of saying Matthew, the tax gatherer? Who's got the answer? All right, go ahead. Where is that? You don't like the IRS? Oh, okay. All right. Just.
And they would show that even a tax gatherer could be an apostle.
Absolutely. That would have been shocking to Jesus' disciples. Think about who the rabbis of that day would have chosen for those who would follow them. But Jesus didn't choose a Pharisee or a scribe or Herodian or any kind of nobleman. Not only did he choose four fishermen, he chose a tax collector. This was a profession that in the New Testament is usually linked with prostitutes, Gentiles, and sinners. Those are usually in the company of tax gatherers or publicans. They dealt with public money. They were part of a public service. A little girl came back from Bible class and she said, and her mom said, "What'd y'all learn about today?" And she said, "We learned about Jesus' parable of the Pharisee and the Republican." Well, I want to tell you something about Matthew, the publican. When he was called to follow Jesus, he was sitting in his tax booth. Jesus said, "Come and follow me." And Luke 5 says that he left everything behind and began to follow him. That's significant because if Peter, Andrew, James, and John decided this apostleship thing isn't for us, maybe we made a decision too quick. Let's just go back to fishing. There'll always be other fish in the sea. We can always go back to where we came from. Matthew could not. You think about that overcoming your fear. I've got to leave this behind and I can't go back there. These are ties that have been cut off and severed completely. If you think being a tax gatherer was a bad reputation, who's going to hire a former tax collector? But with great faith, he left everything behind and began to follow him. Matthew, the tax gatherer. Yes, he was a disciple of Jesus, called to be an apostle, to go and fight the good fight. All right, well, let's look to the next list in Mark chapter 3. And we'll start reading at verse 13, Mark 3 and verse 13. "And he went up to the mountain and summoned those whom he himself wanted, and they came to him. And he appointed 12 that they might be with him, and that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to cast out the demons. And he appointed the 12. Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, and James and John, the son of Zebedee, and John the brother of James, to them he gave the name Boanerges, which means sons of thunder, and Andrew and Philip and Bartholomew and Matthew and Thomas, and James the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him." Verse 13 tells us that when Jesus chose the 12, it said he summoned those whom he himself wanted. Now think about the throngs of disciples that Jesus had, multitudes who followed him. Sometimes they were so pressed around him that they were stepping on one another. And so it wasn't like Jesus had a short list. He could have chosen a number. But he chose those whom he himself wanted, which to me implies these are people that nobody else would have wanted. They'd already been passed over by the other rabbis. They didn't have anything to offer by the world standards. They were, as the John MacArthur book calls them, 12 ordinary men. Kind of like the church, isn't it? Mark here calls them the 12. 12 men who came to work together. 12 men who would become one. Who on the outside were very different, but came to fight for one faith. My sister used to have a dog walker who would come and walk her three dogs three times a week. And I was visiting with her one day and asked her, "Do you have any dogs at home? You obviously love dogs. Tell me about the ones you have." And she said, "Oh, I've got one who is a rescue dog who's beaten, one who was run over, and he only has one eye." And she named two or three others who were all ones that we'd probably all pass over. And then she said, "Yeah, I take the ones that nobody else wants." And that's what Jesus did when he chose his 12, those whom he himself wanted, that he would transform from fear to faith by his power. From fear to faith. The first three in this list, in Mark's list, Jesus gives them other names. The first one we've seen already, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter. Keep your finger here, but look over at John chapter 1, at the time when Jesus first met Simon and identified his new name. John chapter 1 and verse 42. This is when Peter's brother Andrew brings him to the Lord. He brought him to Jesus, and Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas," which is translated Peter. That one verse describes from fear to faith. You are Simon. That's who you are. But you shall be Peter. Word that means rock or stone. Doesn't Jesus do that for everyone? You are weak, but you shall be strong. You are faithless, but you shall be faithful. You are useless, but you shall be useful to me in my service. He did that for Peter, from fear to faith. This is what you are, but this is what you shall be. Mark also tells us of James and John, and Jesus gave them a nickname. And fortunately, he gives us that and then tells us what the translation is. Boanerges, which means what? What's the translation for this nickname? Sons of Thunder. Sounds like a wrestling team, doesn't it? Sons of Thunder. Now, we are never told exactly why Jesus gave James and John this nickname. We have some clues. They were the ones who said, "Lord, when you come in your kingdom and sit on your throne, let one of us sit on your right and one on your left." Give us those positions of power and authority and prominence in your kingdom. But there was another occasion when the Samaritans would not allow Jesus and his disciples to pass through. And James and John were the ones who said, "Lord, let us call down fire from heaven and burn them to a crisp." Boy, they really got on board with the message, didn't they? Jesus came to seek and save the lost, and they're wanting to burn them up. And so Jesus called them sons of thunder. But he ultimately transformed them into preachers of the gospel of peace. These, he said, would be with him, verse 14, and then he would send them out to preach. Luke chapter 6 is the next one. And we'll start reading at verse 12. Luke chapter 6 and verse 12. And it was at this time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also named as apostles. Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew his brother, and James and John, and Philip and Bartholomew, and Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon who was called the Zealot, Judas the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. This time, the detail we're given that was not in Matthew and Mark is that before Jesus chose the 12, what had he been doing the whole night before? He had been praying. All right, now again, we are not given the details of what Jesus prayed for. But what might you suppose? What are some things that we can guess Jesus might have been praying for before the next day? What comes to your mind? Okay, so he's praying for them one by one. He's saying their names just as certainly as he did in the garden. Remember, I prayed for these that they may be one as you and I are one, Father. And so praying, Lord, help them. Give them the courage and the faith to overcome their fears and be the men that I want them to be. Help them, Father, in this new work, that they will glorify you. Good. What else comes to mind? What else might Jesus have prayed for? Okay, good. Pray for patience and long-suffering to deal with these men who would be impatient, who would be out for themselves and not for his name's sake. All right, so he spent the whole night in prayer and then the next morning made his choice. That says again that Jesus chose 12. Anybody else find that an odd number? I'm kind of a round numbers guy, 10, 15, 20. Why 12? What do you think the significance is of the number 12? Where else do we see 12 in the Scriptures? The 12 tribes of Israel. All right, so could it be that by choosing 12 apostles, he is saying these will be the pillars of the new covenant, of a new kingdom that's not based on what tribe you're of, but a kingdom of the heart. These will be the ambassadors then who take this into all the world. And so they were to complement the 12 tribes of Israel. We know that this wasn't just an arbitrary number, because when Judas died, they cast lots to choose one to take his place to get the number back to 12. Okay, so in Luke's list, now we have our first difference of the names. There is a name that was in Matthew and Mark that is not on Luke's list. And there is a name in Luke's list that is not in Matthew and Mark. So you see somebody says that and says, well, can't trust the Bible. I told you it was full of contradictions. I mean, the Bible can't even agree on who the 12 apostles were. How can we trust anything that it says? All right, well, first let's find the name. Who has the name that's in Luke's list that we've not yet seen before? Who found it? Thank you. Judas, the son of James. All right. And not in Matthew and Mark. So what name is missing? Still got 12 names. So what name is missing that we found in Matthew and Mark? Thaddeus, all right. So what then is the most logical explanation to why one name here is Thaddeus and one name here is Judas, the son of James? What's the easiest way to reconcile those two differences? Same person. You think of anybody else who goes by more than one name? Look ahead to Acts chapter 1. When they were choosing the replacement for Judas, there were two individuals under consideration. Verse 23 of Acts 1. And they put forward two men, Joseph, called Barsabbas, who was also called Justus, and Matthias. I think that's why they chose Matthias, because they said, well, we don't know what to call him. We got one name, we can remember that. But here's one man who went by three names. Thaddeus is a name that means warm-hearted or childlike heart. In fact, if you're reading the King James Version, when Matthew lists the apostles in Matthew 10, he also calls him Lebius. So he had three names. But it could be that Thaddeus was a nickname for someone who was young or tender-hearted. But by birth, he was Judas, the son of James. Which, by the way, if your name was Judas, wouldn't you want to go by another name? In John's gospel, John even makes the point in John 14, when he calls him Judas, he puts in parentheses, not Iscariot. How'd you like it if you went through life? Hi, I'm Judas, not Iscariot. Good to meet you. But there he is. So we've got a contradiction solved there. The most reasonable explanation, this is the same individual. Now, for the third time, we see someone referred to as Simon the Zealot. Every time he's listed in the four lists, it's Simon the Zealot. Now, that, first of all, distinguishes him from Simon Peter. But what would have been astounding about this description, Simon the Zealot? Who can help us understand what a zealot was? All right, thank you. Very good. The zealots were a political party. They were rebels, as our brother said, who opposed the Roman occupation of Palestine. This is the promised land. This is our land. And this oppressive government has come in. So while the tax collector worked for the government, the zealots were known to carry daggers who would have targeted tax collectors for assassination. And now Jesus calls a tax collector and a zealot to be his disciple. Sometimes I wonder when Jesus sent them out in twos, if he put Simon the zealot and Matthew the tax gatherer together and said, go work it out. But isn't the church like that too? People who are on different spectrums? Well, how are we going to learn to love one another? Because we both love Jesus. That's what brought these two together. And remember, they came to be known as the 12. It wasn't 11 plus 1, the 12. They worked together because it wasn't about them. It was about the Master who called them. Sometimes our prejudices are based on fear. Got to drive that out. Simon the Zealot. Well, we've got time for one more list in Acts chapter 1. Hopefully you're still there from looking at verse 23. And verse 12. Then they returned to Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is near Jerusalem, a Sabbath day's journey away. And when they had entered, they went up to the upper room where they were staying, that is, Peter and John and James and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas the son of James. These all with one mind were continually devoting themselves to prayer, along with the women and Mary the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. Well, obviously we're down to 11 because Judas has hanged himself. But I want you to notice that Jesus' prayer for unity has now been answered, because these men, who on more than one occasion were fighting among themselves, which one of us is going to be the greatest? Now it says they are continuing with one mind in the temple. They have become one, just as their master prayed. They realize we don't preach ourselves, but the Lord Jesus Christ. It's not that people would remember us and have a St. John's Hospital or a St. Peter's Basilica or a St. Andrew's golf course. They didn't want that. They wanted people to remember His name. And sure enough, they went out preaching, and people marveled. These are uneducated, untrained men. They're speaking with boldness and confidence. How did this happen? Well, they'd been with Jesus. They had enlisted in His army, and He had drafted them one by one and transformed them. First, they were men of little faith, lacking in understanding, no faith. And now they're being marveled at. And Jesus will do that for each soldier in His army, to equip us to fight the good fight of faith. Do not fear. Fight. Thank you for listening this morning.